Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Tuesday, everybody. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK from Manhattan as the Nittany Lion basketball team tonight will take on Mississippi State in the NIT semifinals. The other half of the bracket, the opening game at 7 o'clock is Western Kentucky against Utah. The Nittany Lions at Mississippi State scheduled for 9, but you and I both know it's not going to probably start till 9:20 this evening. We'll be talking with Dick Girardi in the next half hour and get his preview of the game for tonight and how the Nittany Lions have played. And also coming up in just a few moments, a little bit on spring football and on the combine with Frank Bodani of the York Daily Record. Looking forward to hearing from him. The Final Four, of course, is now set. And with the Final Four set, the NIT takes center stage tonight. And then the championship game is on Thursday night. That championship game is at 7 o'clock on Thursday. But first things first, it is Mississippi State and the Nittany Lions tonight at the Garden. And it's Utah, Western Kentucky in the opening half at 7. Now, they listed as a 9 o'clock start tonight for Penn State, Mississippi State. But you and I both know that there's no way Penn State, Mississippi State are starting at 9 o'clock this evening. It'll probably be about a 9:20 start, but we're still going on the air at 8:30 this evening. This is a great opportunity for the Nittany Lion basketball team. It's interesting, on one side of the bracket, you have Western Kentucky and Utah. They're two older teams over there. And Penn State along the way has beaten nothing but older teams along the way. They won against Temple, older team. Won against Notre Dame, older team. Won against Marquette, older team. Tonight, Penn State is young in most areas, but really in terms of the matchup, Mississippi State is just as young in many areas. So that's the one time that they'll match up with a couple teams that are similar in terms of age. So that'll be interesting tonight. And again, the other matchup is older teams. But Penn State, the older team was Temple. Penn State beat them. The older team was absolutely Notre Dame because Mike Bray always wants to have older teams. And I don't blame Mike. I think that's you know, I think that the long-term method of growing a program is still doing it in a way where you end up with older players. And Penn State went in and won there. Marquette has older players. You know, Rousey's a fifth-year guy, for goodness sakes. Again, older players. So tonight, Penn State and Mississippi State at the Garden in the NIT semifinals. We'll have it for you tonight here on News Radio 1070 WKOK and on WKOK.com beginning at 8:30. Coming up, we'll talk about Penn State spring practice with Frank Bodani. Four practices in the books for the Nittany Lions as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back. Frank Bodani, York Daily Record in a few moments. And today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us in Manhattan today for the NIT semifinals tonight at Madison Square Garden, Penn State and Mississippi State. Before we get to that, let's talk a little football now with Frank Bodani, York Daily Record. Frank, always great to have you with us as we have another great time on this Tuesday.
Yeah, you guys have a lot of fun here, huh?
You might as well. What the heck? You might as well have some fun in the doggone thing. I mean, is life really that serious at times?
No, the first day of spring, you know, we're just shoveling out down here.
Yeah, I shoveled 6 inches of spring off my walk this morning. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Frank.
But no snow on Tuesday at Pro Day, so it was a good time, I think, for everybody.
Yeah, I think it probably would have been. You don't get the best vantage point of everything, but you also get into a lot of conversations. So, Frank, what was it like covering Pro Day, and what stuck out to you about it?
More guys, more media, just more people. Last year was the first one I was, too. This was a lot more ramped up. you know, if nothing else, because Saquon was there, even though he didn't really do anything. Drew the biggest crowd, and he still was a story, you know, talking about his life, his new baby coming, so on and so forth. So he kind of stole the show a little bit without working out. I thought some of the guys, though, that didn't go to the combine, I thought impressed. Or some of the guys who went to the combine but didn't do certain things there. I think right away, Saeed Blacknell really stands out. You almost forget about that guy, but always talented, you know. Ran a great 40 time, looked really smooth running pass routes. I think he definitely helped himself. Didn't even go to the combine, but he had to help himself big time. We could start with there. I think most of the guys helped themselves.
Yeah,
starting with him, yeah. Deshaun Hamilton with a nice 40 time, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah, Blacknell ran a 4.39, which that's going to help him along the way. A guy like Curtis Cothran, that looked like he slimmed down a little bit, and maybe he's trying to get himself into defensive end shape, but my understanding was he helped himself.
Yeah, he ran well. I think he's mentioned, at least to one reporter, that he's going to bulk himself back up, obviously.
Okay.
He was down to about 283, but he ran well. I think his broad jump was good, strength good. Even guys that you don't really maybe completely are sold on having a great chance at a pro career, like Colin Castagna. Some of his numbers were really good. I don't think anybody ever questioned his strength. I mean, Franklin would talk about him, but 30 reps on the bench press stands out. And I think he did well in his other things as well. And I think everybody seems really loose there. And I think Deshaun Hamilton talked about it. It's tough at the combine. I mean, you're there in that arena doing your thing one at a time when everybody's watching you. Here, you're around your friends, your buddies, your familiars. I think it was easier for guys.
And it's interesting. This kind of training is also different than football training in a lot of ways. You have to train like you're a track guy to do something like this. I always sense, and I don't know what you know, if you got this sense on Tuesday, because obviously I was in Milwaukee Tuesday. I wasn't here.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But they always seem to be relieved when that part of the process is over with.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine being a football player and wanting to have your money and your hopes and your dreams basically depending on how you come out of a track stance.
Yeah.
You know, that's not what you're about. So all of a sudden you have to stop what you're about and train for this particular thing. And look at it in a way for Barkley. So he and everybody at the combine, but I think people close to Penn State, and Franklin said it on Monday, his numbers didn't really wow people that know him.
That's right.
You know, right? So he spent all this time, and I don't know about money, but all this time training for the combine, when in some ways it's such a crapshoot. I mean, I don't think he did as well in some of those events as what his own head coach had seen him do earlier at different places.
Yeah, because
it's not football stuff completely.
Right, and that's why, when, for example, James, I think, mentioned the other day that Barkley had seen him do 34 at 225. Most I'd ever seen him do was 30. And he did 20.
Yeah, I guess what he did, Lift for Life, right?
Yeah, he did 29 at the combine. He's run 4.33 before, so 4 disappointed him. I mean, imagine having a disappointing day personally and everybody go, wow, you're awesome, because they didn't expect any of that.
Right, it's weird to me. It's almost like people don't know who he is or something. I'm thinking, God, all you do is put in a tape. You've seen what he can do. How does this surprise so many people? That's the whole mess thing I got from it. I guess because we cover him all the time, but it's not like he was under the radar.
Exactly. And this is a question I don't know the answer to, and I don't know if it was brought up. Did he say what his weight is right now?
He didn't say it when I was there.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Yeah, because remember, he was 233 at the combine and said he wanted to get down a couple pounds.
I think Gesicki's weight fluctuated. He talked a little bit about that, but I don't remember Barkley doing that. So
what do you
everybody
think
was too worried about him being a dad.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a great story for him. What about the interest in Gesicki along the way? Because now you've got enough people that are saying that he might be tail end first round.
Well, I mean, to me, it's weird in a sense with him. I always look at him as a receiver, really.
Yeah. Right.
Penn State talks about losing a tight end. I almost never even looked at him as a tight end at Penn State. Hey, it's all the credit in the world to him. I think he tried his best. He really improved his blocking. Mm-hmm. He was never a good blocking tight end.
Right.
So make him, let him be what he is. He was basically an extra tall receiver at Penn State. He's going to be an extra tall receiver in the NFL. So he is what he is, but what he is pretty interesting.
Well, I think that's
what he's proven.
And Frank, I think what helps him, now, I know he didn't play basketball at this level, but he was a two-time Jersey State Player of the Year in basketball. I think the success of guys like Antonio Gates, Jimmy Graham, Tony Gonzalez, they're all basketball players playing that spot. I think that helps.
The last 3 years, he played football passes as if they were going up for rebounds.
Right.
And stuff.
And exactly.
That definitely helped him. That enabled, when he didn't come down with one of those balls, I think it might have been the Fiesta Bowl, one of those passes in the end zone.
Yeah.
We were almost surprised, right? Because he was getting every one for 2 years.
Right. Exactly.
Anything near him. Yeah. So.
On to the current team. James Franklin at his press conference on Monday. What's your gauge on the current team?
That they're finally to a place where they're getting to where they're just filling in a little bit here, a spot there, a spot here. And he may not have talked like that. He didn't come out and maybe say that, but that's what I get from it, is that they're beyond this whole loading up the depth, hoping people don't get hurt, massive fill-ins. They're the part now where, hey, we lost a couple of guys. We have some young safeties. We just need to find the right guy, not this overhaul anymore from the, you know, we're not loading mounds of dirt into the foundation anymore. And that's really, I think, a great spot to be coming off two seasons like they are because, yeah, they still are looking for a middle linebacker, but most of the places on their team, like their offensive line, it finally has the depth, even if guys get hurt, you shouldn't worry. They're really at where their upper-tier opponents have been, you know? They're finally there. And it's just picking out a Lamont Wade moving here and, you know, a Cam Brown developing a little more there. They're real close. That's what I get out of it.
And then the next part of this, too, is that you lose a Saquon Barkley, but could you potentially gain more yards in your rushing game this year? Because you still have some talented backs there, but you also have an offensive line that has the potential to have made progress to make that happen. Would that be a fair assessment?
Oh yeah, I think a lot of us media types would predict Miles Sanders to have as much, maybe more rushing yards than Saquon. Penn State to run the ball more effectively overall than last year. It has nothing to do with Saquon. It's just that their line is better. Teams won't be selling out everything in the world to stop their number one running threat. It's going to be a whole different way, maybe not that they play, but that teams play them. And it might help them in some ways not to have – it won't help them not to have Barkley and that they lose a home run threat. But in some ways, more balance, things are going to be more flowing through different parts, I think, easier than worrying about how do you get the best guy in the field the ball. You know, and I think sometimes it seemed like to us it became that they had to, and I understand it. Why wouldn't you, right? But they've tried so hard to get the best guy in the field the ball that at times it seemed like maybe it was a little, I don't know, I hate to say dysfunctional, but it just didn't work as smooth sometimes. Then they adjusted, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I understand what you're saying. And here's a part that I think is a little underplayed. On Barkley's presence. Barkley, you know, we know what he can do when he has his hands in the ball. He became a better blocker, as evidenced by the touchdown that won the Iowa game. He picked up the blitz. We see what he's done as a receiver. But here's an area that is very hard to replace. Saquon Barkley, the decoy. I thought a lot of things opened up just on fakes to him.
Yeah, and they did, and I think Penn State overall adjusted really well in the second half. They just threw the ball.
Yep.
They did what teams gave them, and they looked comfortable doing it. It's just, you know, it just comes back, honestly, to the two games they lost. If they win by those two games, we don't talk about any of this, probably look the same way. But you're right. I think him as a decoy. So they're going to have to own everything a little bit more. They're going to have to earn it a little more. But I just think that they have, goes back to that depth that they developed and the younger guys that they have coming in to supplement it. I think they'll be able to be okay because their overall offense is going to be better, stronger, more experienced, not this type of option, but other types of options to help. They're going to make up for it as a whole, not with maybe one guy.
Frank,
but as a whole,
yeah, Frank,
make up for it.
Right, I agree with that. And Frank, how do you look at the defensive part? And it, and obviously, there's going to be a fascination of many about Micah Parsons.
A lot of pressure on that kid, in a sense.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's a lot to ask of any true freshman to come in from day one and be your middle linebacker. He's going to have to get help, and he's going to have guys step up around him. So, I mean, Cam Brown needs to take the next step, has to. Same for Koa Farmer. I mean, they don't have anything else proven, really, behind those guys. Those guys can't falter.
Yeah.
They got to help Micah, and Ellis Brooks has to be able to be able to play, too. I mean, they have to have guys take the next step there because so many of them are just names to us. You know, we don't know really what they can do. And I think they're going to have to – this defense may have to be led by their secondary in a lot of ways. I mean, their secondary, their cornerbacks could be so good. And you're hoping, if you're a Penn State fan, that some of the switches at safety will complement that. But their back end could be great, could be great. And that might have to help the transitions of some of the, you know, finding the new defensive tackles, finding the new middle linebacker. That and the ends. I mean, you got like six guys playing defensive end.
Yeah.
Who are a couple of them going to end up being terrors or not, finally?
Right. Because I think the biggest, there will be several elements for Parsons. Say it works out for him, a middle linebacker. Well, one of the biggest elements that will be is that, you know, he played a lot of defensive end in high school and so forth. If you go inside, the traffic pattern is so dramatically different inside than outside. I think if he can get used to that, you know, we all know what he is as an athlete, but if he can out quickly, that's, I think, what opens the door for him to having to being effective in that spot.
Well, let's tell you what. Insiders know that he's more than just all the physical stuff.
That's right. That smart.
He has football instincts, even at his age, because if they didn't, they wouldn't be trying him there right now. I mean, they wouldn't even be doing it. But they know that he's more than the crazy athleticism. So I think you're right. If he can handle it, and it's maybe not as much of a stretch that he can, and then just go from there, you know, see how the other guys develop. He doesn't have to play middle linebacker his whole career. Let's just see how he does at first. And, you know, it's going to be Brent Pry's, I'm sure, up for the challenge. You know, he's excited about trying to make this work in a different way. And everything around them can help Micah. You know, if they're really great off the edge with Sharif Miller and Shane Simmons and those guys, then that will help maybe ease up some of the responsibility. I mean, if offenses are worried about getting killed on the left and the right all the time, it might make it a little easier.
Frank, it is always a pleasure. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Yes. Awesome. Have a great finish to basketball season, okay?
Appreciate it, Frank, very much. All right.
All right. Enjoy. Take care, guys.
Dick Girardi next half hour on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Attention, Central Pennsylvania truck buyers. This is the sales event you've been waiting for. Sunbury Motors' annual March New Truck Sale. SMC is the only Ford dealer in the area that has four city blocks of new Fords and has sold over 40,000 new trucks. Sunbury Motors has over 320 new Fords to choose from. SMC has Motor Trend's Truck of the Year, the 2018 Ford F-150 starting at $25,969. SMC has 61, that's right, 61 2018 Ford Escapes, and they're priced from just $19,730. There's 25 2018 Ford Explorers starting under 30 grand. And there's 45 2018 Ford Super Duty trucks from $38,584. Plus 0% financing for up to 72 months on select models. Central PA truck buyers, this is it. SMC's annual March New Truck Sale. Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury.
Thank you.
sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to Manhattan. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Penn State, Mississippi State tonight in the NIT semifinals. Dick Girardi, my broadcast partner, joins me. DJ, what is it now, 478, 79 games, something like that?
Yeah, I wrote it down the other night, Steve. I forget what it was. I know we said it on the broadcast, but we're closing on 500.
We're closing on 500, and back to the Garden they go.
Again,
we get to see Mark the Usher again, the security guy.
Absolutely.
Whose daughter is a graduate of Penn State.
And very nice.
Very nice. All right, Dick, this is some. What we're seeing is something you and I talked about in November that they were capable of, but it took time. Why did it take time, and what do you think made it change?
Well, Steve, look, they were obviously competitive through November and December. I mean, you think about the game in Brooklyn against Texas A&M where they were in the game. They made a nice comeback at the end, had an opportunity. Same thing at NC State, had an opportunity. But they weren't quite ready to win those kind of games. And really a lot of that is just the group as a whole hadn't been together for even 50 games at that point. And once they got really to about 50 or 60 games together, you could really see the change. It came in early January. Then it went back a while when Josh Reeves was unable to play in four games. But really, since the first Ohio State game, they played at a pretty high level almost every game. And I think they're right now playing their best ball of the season. As we get to the final week of the season, one way or another, Steve, it's going to be over this time next week.
Right, exactly. Now, when you look at Josh Reeves, they are 11-5 since he got back into the lineup. I think it's pretty obvious to say Tony Carr is the best player. What makes Josh Reeves the most valuable player?
Because he does everything. In baseball, he'd be what is known as a five-tool player. Yeah. I mean, he's a great defender, as good a defender as in the Big Ten. Whoever the other team's best player, regardless of position, unless he's a center, and he's a solid ball handler. He can run the point for you, and they've been running a lot of those sets lately with Garner and Carr running the wings and trying to get them shots. He's become a better than average three-point shooter, good free throw shooter, tremendous finisher at the rim, really good passer. Excellent reader. I mean, Steve, that's not a whole lot else at basketball. And he's a great team guy. He's got, to me, of all the players on the team, I think he's got the best understanding of the whole game. And he sees things that are hard to see, and I think he really helps the coaching staff. And when he was not there, the difference in the team was obvious in that four-game stretch of Big Ten game.
You and I have also seen a lot of seniors hit the stretch run, and there's a different look in their eye because they understand the stakes. What are you seeing in the eyes of Shep Garner?
Yeah, he's been great, Steve. He's been great for a good month. He's had a phenomenal four-year career. He's going to end up as top five all-time leading scorer when I think he scores 3 points on Tuesday night. He'll pass Pete Lisicki. He's got the single-season record now for most threes in a season. And, yeah, more than anything, he just – and I think that video that I'm sure you've seen of Shep going back to the locker room after the loss to Purdue in the Big Ten told you how much he wanted this. He wanted to win the Big Ten tournament. He wasn't there just to get to the NCAAs. He wanted to win it. This was his league, and this was his best chance. And when it ended, it was so disappointing. And I know he wanted to be in the tournament to maybe finish his career like Taylor Battle did in the NCAA, but you know what? They've made the best of a situation they didn't want a couple of weeks ago, but now they just want one thing, to win the next game and then win the next game, and then there's no more games to play, and there's not many teams every year that get to win their last game, very, very few. Yeah. So it'd be a great thing if they could find a way to beat Mississippi State at either Western Kentucky or Utah on Thursday for the championship.
All right. Tony Carr, of course, facilitates all this. What are the areas of growth you've seen in Tony Carr in the last, let's say, 2 months?
Yeah, I think what Tony, for maybe a couple of weeks, and part of it was when Josh was out, I think he was so wanted to win so badly, he was almost trying too hard and was maybe taking some shots that he didn't need to be taking. But I think he's got a much better sense now of a good shot and not a good shot, when to get the ball, who to get it to, where to get it to him. And he's just got a great pace through his game right now. And he's got that look, too. And then, look, he's had it since high school. I mean, he was a double state champion, double Catholic League winner in Philadelphia as a junior and senior at Roman Catholic. So, I mean, he's been on a lot of winning sides, and he's been the reason for it. So, yeah, I just think he's got a better overall sense of everything that's happening on the court. And he, like the other guys, maybe he's a little quieter. He might not see the fire. Although if you look closely, you can see it. You can see it Tuesday night in Milwaukee for sure.
Yeah,
he wants it. I mean, he wants to win. And I think, look, I think the coaching staff a lot. They've maximized Shep's abilities, and that's maybe the unhidden thing in all of what's going on here. But all of these guys have gotten better because they've been coached and they've been willing to be coached. But even some of the sets they were running on Tuesday night, and I haven't watched the tape. In fact, I didn't even tape the game because I didn't really need to go back and see it again. But they ran some stuff they hadn't run all year.
Right.
And it was beautifully done. And they ran it because they had a team that was susceptible to certain things. And that's coaching. And they put Tony in a great spot and obviously Shep, as I said. Lamar Stevens obviously was ridiculous on Tuesday.
Yeah, and that you identified right away that Lamar was going to be the matchup, except for one 3-point shot he settled for. What did you think of that performance?
Yeah, he was tremendous. He put himself in a position to finish plays because he recognized who was guarding him, where they were coming from, and again, the coaching staff gave Lamar space. They made sure. Did you get a chance to watch the Loyola?
Yeah.
The second half, they ran an offense. I used to coach in rec ball in Baltimore. Took three guys, said stand over by the side of the court. They played 2-on-2 the whole second half.
That's right.
They made their first 13 baskets. Well, that's not exactly what Penn State was doing, but it was not totally dissimilar. Is they were just lifting players out of Lamar's way so there could be no help, and just letting him go against players that couldn't guard him. And when there was help, he was able to finish over that anyway because he's gotten so much stronger. And then he made that incredible shot over in front of us with a double team, clock running down, deep left corner. And then, of course, at the end, it was the two back screen, Shep Garner back screen lobs. I think Josh threw one of them. I'm not sure if Tony threw the other one. I don't remember. It was happening so fast. But, yeah, he was great. I knew he'd be good. I couldn't say he would be that because that was always the matchup that was going to be the good one.
And how important has it been? There's been a calmness about how Patrick Chambers has approached all this. You and I both noticed it. How important has it been, Dick, that there's certain things they've saved? That last play against Ohio State to Josh Reeves was a specific bench call and was something they hadn't run a lot, but it was a specific bench call, and they had Ohio State backing up and didn't call timeout. And then the one they ran against Temple that they worked on and shoot around that entire three or four times, and then when they ran it in the game, they've been saving that one too.
Yeah, you know, Steve, they look like a team that's played 37 games and has had, 100 or so practices, and they're in great shape, and that's testament to the training staff. I mean, these guys, when teams are starting to get tired, they're getting stronger, and you can really see it in the last two games. I think they were athletically superior to Notre Dame and Marquette, but I also thought they were in better shape. And when you get to this stage of March, that's huge.
Yeah.
It is cool that the staff saved certain things, and they're very confident, I think, in the players' ability to execute it. And they're playing with such a great rhythm and pace, really at both ends. Right now, I mean, probably the only thing they're going to feel bad about whenever the last game comes is they're not going to get to play some because they're having so much fun playing right now.
Jamari Wheeler, not scoring points, but he's preventing a lot of points.
He was amazing, and his stat sheet did not tell anything of what he did really in the game on Tuesday night, but he was so disruptive, and he was getting to balls no human being should be able to get to save them, to steal them, to intercept outlet passes. I mean, there was that one sequence when Penn State's offense finally started to They were just having issues. I think maybe at the under 8 minute mark in the fourth quarter, but he saved a couple defensive possessions that didn't get. Marquette could have been a lot closer when they started to make their run. He's a very unique player. Obviously, his summer is going to have to be spent working on his jump shot, working on some aspects of his offensive game. But man, defensively, he's a guy who can help you win games for sure.
What do you think of John Hara and his development along the way?
Yeah, he's been a revelation here down the stretch since Big Mike got hurt. Most teams, when you lose, counting Reggie Lynch, which I mean, he really didn't play much, but Jackson at Michigan State was the best shot blocker in the Big Ten and leading percentage field goal shooter. I mean, if he got the ball in there, he was going to score. To lose him at the stage they lost in that second last game of the regular season, it's hard to replace. And I think John has done really well in every aspect of the game. And probably most importantly, Steve, he's played. He hasn't tried to do something he can't do. He knows what right. He can do, and he does it. And I think he's been coached to that. And he's a really strong kid. He sets really good screens. He does a lot of fundamental stuff, again, that helps you win games. And he'd be a really good – you can see it now. It was hard to tell earlier, but you can really see that he's going to be a very good guy for the program for the next 4 years.
No question. You actually, because of your travel situation, you had a chance to take a good long look at Mississippi State in their win at Louisville. What struck you about them?
SEC, amazing athletes, young guys, not a senior scholarship player on the team that is just now hitting its peak. They ran Louisville out of the gym. I mean, they didn't just win the game; they slaughtered them. They basically made them quit, and that's Louisville with a lot of guys that have played pretty deep in the NCAA tournament right. A couple of times. So. Yeah, they were. They are like Penn State to me, are a team that's absolutely hitting its peak. Now, a lot of things went right for them on Tuesday night that probably wouldn't in a normal game. Like they made a very high percentage of threes, which really right. isn't their game.
They only hit for the season 32% of their threes.
Right. Yeah, and I think that's obviously a scouting report thing that the Penn State coaches will work on. If you wanted to say, give me two completely different teams to play back to back. Well, Marquette and Mississippi State would be those teams.
That's right.
But a power team, shot blockers, dunkers, finishers, and typically really get after you on defense, Ben Howland kind of team. And a lot of people, I think, probably didn't even realize Ben has been in Starkville for a couple of years. He took over a program that hadn't done well, and obviously he had great success at Pittsburgh and Northern Arizona before that, took UCLA to a couple of Final Fours. So has proved it. And a lot of levels. And I this is a good matchup. It's interesting. Steve, I haven't really been able to sit down and completely analyze it. I think I had a really good sense of the Marquette game before the game was ever played.
Right.
This one's a little different because Mississippi State has changed so much even over the last couple of weeks.
Right.
That I'm going to need to think about this one before I get a real sense of it. And I have that whole game taped. I only saw the second half. I want to watch some more of the Louisville-Mississippi State game. But yeah, just think big, strong, powerful, athletic. Penn State may have an edge in some areas and some basketball skill. And I know Nazir Bostic is going to be back for the game, which is huge because you're going to need some extra bodies. And certainly Naz is going to help in that respect. But yeah, I think it's an interesting matchup. My guess is Penn State will be a slight favorite, probably a 3 or 4 point favorite, but it's not going to be an easy game by any means.
No, not an easy game at all. Dick, the NCAA tournament is the place to be. What is the value, in your opinion, of an NIT?
Yeah, I think look for a team with two seniors who play, and Julie Moore and Shep. It would have been great for them to get in it, but it's great for all the guys who are going to come back and play next season to get a chance to play deep into not only your conference tournament, but a postseason tournament. So if they're good enough and have the kind of year everybody hopes next season, then I think they can jump into the NCAA and be ready to go. If you go back through history, there's been a lot of teams that have won or played deep into the NIT that weren't either didn't get invited, and I think Patrick was right in our post game. I think they just missed on Penn State, but that's they're not the only team they missed on the committee. They just, by their own criteria, they didn't have the right resume. But if you had seen them play and understood all of the everything in context, then they were clearly by the end of the season an NCAA team. But I think it helps a lot, though, to your question for next season. Why would this team? I mean, they just look so comfortable now.
Yeah.
Confidence is an elusive thing in life and in sports, but man, once you get it,
yeah,
it is amazing. And you got to have the talent to go with it, or the work ethic, or whatever. They have that now. They have the confidence. That was the last step to get this thing going in the right direction, and they're doing it all in the postseason without Big Mike Watkins, right, which I don't know that any of us would have thought possible, but they're doing it.
The heavyweights in terms of name recognition are going Villanova, Kansas, Duke. Craziness, of course, has reigned in other areas of this. What have been your thoughts on how this has played out?
It's been fun. I mean, it's just been, there's been so many surprising results. And, you know, watching Loyola, what have they won, 3 games by 4 points?
Yeah.
And 2 of them on last-second shots, and basically put the game away last night on a shot with 6 seconds left. I mean, it's just, that's the fun of it. And I hope the powers that be always keep the schools from the Missouri Valley in it. I'm always worried that there's going to be a money grab at some point, and the big conferences will go, hey, we need all this money. We don't want to share it with Loyola. But, yeah, I mean, how cool is it to see our buddy Bruce Weber with a chance to get to the Final Four after getting, you know, doing a nice job at Illinois and not being able to keep it in Calgary? He's got a K-State there. And, I mean, K-State, Loyola, who came up with that? Elite Eight game in Atlanta, and the Towers are running. I mean, I think Villanova's playing as good as anyone. I'm not surprised Duke is playing this well. You could see it all along. It was just a question of when they were going to figure it out on defense. Kansas again at an Omaha. They had to travel a long way for first to Wichita, then to Omaha. They're alive. And out west, anybody who watched Michigan play in the last 12 games of the regular season in the conference tournament,
yes,
is not surprised they're still playing. What was surprising was how poorly they played in the first 2 rounds. They were just able to survive it. They look like a team that hadn't played 2 weeks. That's what they look like.
Exactly.
They just weren't ready. Well, they're ready now, and they don't have any superstars or even close to it on that team. But man, they are just playing. With such confidence, and it's, as we saw when they came to Penn State, it's Michigan with defense and really good defense.
And we also saw them against Michigan State in New York.
They
locked that team down.
Yep, no, they did, and that's what's kept them alive in the 2 games that they played in the first round, 2 rounds in Wichita. Their offense did not make the trip from New York at all, but their defense kept them alive. I mean, they were just a little better than Montana, and it gave them an opportunity at a miracle in the Houston game. I don't know if you saw our buddy Brendan Quinn's story about Jordan Poole, the kid from Milwaukee,
yes,
but he had one of the great lines ever. As Devin Davis, and I kind of forgotten he was the kid that was at Indiana. He was shooting 2 shots for Houston to essentially clinch the game. Their second round game, Rob Gray, the Houston Storm, walks up to Jordan Poole. He goes, hey, Poole, where are you from? And he goes, Milwaukee. And Gray says, man, a couple minutes, you're going back to Milwaukee. And then, of course, Poole hits the shot that wins the game. I'm not sure where Rob is from, but he went back where he's from. But that's how Brandon started the story. It was great stuff. But that's the kind of neat stuff you see in the tournament. But, you know, what a great play they drew up at the end. And they had a timeout, Steve, which was the key for Michigan. Remember, they missed the free throw.
Yep.
If Michigan doesn't have a timeout, they're launching one from 60 feet.
Right.
But because they had a timeout, they were able to throw a pass, get 2 dribbles, and a pass and a shot. And how he made it, I don't know that. But you can't make it if you don't get a chance at it. They got a chance, and they're still playing, and they're going to be a pretty solid favorite, I would think, over Florida State on Sunday.
And the Nittany, and the Nittany Lions are still playing, too. So
absolutely.
Yeah. Getting closer to 500 games. Wow.
Yeah, there you go, pal.
Wow. Boy, and somehow you're still sane.
No, I wasn't very sane Tuesday into Wednesday trying to get home.
No, no, you weren't.
3 flights canceled, 1 train ride to Chicago, when I get on the train, they tell me, oh, the flight you're getting on is canceled. And there's no flights the next day. And I just, as I was telling you, I just kept refreshing my phone until I got a flight. I said, ah, BWI, that's me. I can do that.
I actually was looking. I was actually looking up flights for you until you told me you got one.
So. Yeah, I know. No, I got one. Got one to BWI. Jumped on a train and then I was home. I looked up. It was exactly 24 hours after I was supposed to be home. But I'm sure there were a lot of people trying to get east the last couple of days. Well, it was a hard go.
Last I checked, Penn Station was five floors underneath the Garden.
There you go. I can get there. I know that.
You better
know
be
the
there.
Way.
You better be there, pal. All right.
I know the way. That's an easy one. That's 75 minutes on the train.
Got it.
That's
perfect.
Not a hard one.
Dick Girardi, today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.